Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und wie du es vielleicht sogar gerade hörst, ich habe ein riesiges Grinsen im Gesicht, denn ich habe heute im Interview einen ganz besonderen Menschen, wie ich finde, und zwar ist es John Strelecki, den du vielleicht kennst. Er ist der Autor von dem Buch Das Café am Rande der Welt, The Big Five for Life, und ist einer meiner absoluten Lieblingsautoren, so ein inspirierender Mensch, und ich hatte jetzt gerade das Interview mit ihm und ich bin so begeistert und freue mich einfach so sehr, es mit dir zu teilen. Wir reden darüber, wie man seine Vision finden kann, wie man die Big Five for Life finden kann, warum es so wichtig ist, dankbar zu sein, was das Big Five for Life von John Strelecki ist, was sein Purpose of Life ist. Und es ist einfach ein wunderschönes, ganz positives Interview voller Freude. Und ja, ich freue mich einfach sehr, es teilen zu können. Und ich habe auch mit John gesprochen und er hat gesagt, sehr, sehr gerne können wir nochmal ein Interview machen. Und dafür würde es ihn einfach interessieren, was ein Thema wäre, worüber du gerne sprechen wollen würdest, beziehungsweise wo du gerne eine Antwort von ihm haben wollen würdest. Und wenn du gerne möchtest, dass wir nochmal ein Interview aufnehmen, dann kannst du einfach nach dem Interview oder währenddessen zu mir auf Instagram gehen und mir einfach unter dem Post von heute zu dem Interview schreiben, was du dir wünschst als anderes Thema, über das wir sprechen sollen. Und du kannst John Strelecki auch einfach ganz liebe Grüße da lassen, da freut er sich auch, und schreiben, was du aus dem Interview für dich mitgenommen hast, einfach @LauraMarlinaSeiler auf Instagram. Und jetzt geht es aber schnurstracks los mit dem Interview mit John Strelecki. Ganz viel Spaß! I'm so grateful, so happy, so delighted that we have a very, very special guest in the podcast today. It's John Strelecki, which you might know from the book Das Café am Rande der Welt in German. And I'm so happy to have you here, John. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you so much. And thank you for accommodating me in English, too.
Yeah. How are you? Where are you right now? Give us a little bit of, where you are right now and how do you do?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm actually in Frankfurt, Germany. I started off my travels in Hamburg. Now I'm in Frankfurt, and then I go to Munich after this. And I'm in the midst of a media tour. So
awesome. Great. So, and how do you feel?
I feel great, actually. Yeah, it's I had the chance last night to interact with so many people who had read the books, and I gave a presentation about the Big Five for Life, which was fantastic, a lot of fun. People were laughing because I, when I present, it's my goal to really engage people. You know, I want them to be laughing. I want them to be cheering and yelling and screaming and having a good time and all the rest of that. And so people were laughing afterwards. They're like, okay, I think that is the loudest we have ever heard this group ever. I said, all right, awesome. Now I can go home because I've done my job.
Awesome. That's beautiful. So I always start my interviews with asking, what are you most grateful for at the moment?
We were talking offline just before we started. So without a doubt, I'm most grateful for my family. Yeah, I have a daughter, and I've never imagined that I could have such an amazing experience as a father as I do. And so I'm very, very grateful that the universe gave me the opportunity to be a dad.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. As we talked before, we were just talking about our children and that it's just the most beautiful thing in the world. So I feel that very much, that gratitude. Yes.
Yeah. And my daughter texted me yesterday, so she's 11 now. So, you know, we're into the texting phase, but it's really cool because she just texted me and just said, "Hey dad, are you back yet? I miss you." You know,
aww.
And yeah, I see it on your face and that's exactly the way I felt, like, yeah. Wow, I miss you too.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. That really just touches the heart. Yeah, that's beautiful. So let's dive right into your books and the meaning of life. And yeah, I'm so happy to be able to talk to you because one of the questions I get the most, as I am also a coach, people always ask me, Laura, how do I find my purpose of life? How do I find my vision, what am I here for? And right. in your books, I mean, this is one of the central topics that you talk about, that it's so important to be in your purpose, to live your purpose and to ask certain questions and to really get there. So I ask this really easy question. How do we find our purpose of life?
Yeah, so let me backtrack a tiny bit on that and say why I feel it's that relevant to the human life, right? And for me, for many years, I was just sort of wandering, trying to make it through the day, you know, and I think I was just following the traditional paths of this is what you do. You go to school and then you get done with this level of school and you go to the next school, right? And then you try and get a good job. That was the very prevalent in my environment to get a good job, right? And it was all about security and safety and trying to basically not completely have your life fall apart. But as I was on these paths, I found that I wasn't really that excited about life. As a matter of fact, as you got older, right? So about 10, 11, 12, you stopped playing as much. And then I started my first job when I was 12, right? And there's this pressure then to get good grades in high school so that you can get into university, and then pressure to get good grades in university so you can get a good job. And I don't know, like as I got older every year, it just seemed like there was less and less fun. And I kept thinking to myself, wow, is this it? The best days are behind me when I was six and I got to play in the sandbox, right? And so I kept at it and kept at it. But then when I was about 28 years old, I had this very powerful epiphany on a beach in Costa Rica. I had been training full time to try and make it as a professional athlete. I was going to school at night to get another degree. I was working full time. So like every second of my life was scheduled. And then I took this month to go explore Costa Rica in between jobs. And I was sitting on a beach, and I described this scene in Das Café, but Mike is the character who actually describes it, but it was based on my experience. And so I'm sitting on this beach in Costa Rica, and I had this tremendous epiphany that, wow, everything I've been so worried about, that I've been so stressed about, all these paths that I've been following, which didn't really fit me, but I just felt I had to follow. These ocean waves, they don't care. Right? They're gonna keep crashing on this beach for about 10 billion more years, and they really don't care about my little problems. And those stars that are coming out now, they don't care either. Right? And I don't know, it's just this massive feeling of, wait a minute, maybe there's more to this game than I have been thinking about. And this overriding thought came to me, why am I here? And this opened up a whole can of opportunity, a Pandora's box of thinkings and feelings. And I wish I could say I was smart enough to, at that moment, figure it all out. But to the contrary, I remember going home from that trip and writing in my journal, never forget this. And then I spent the next 5 years forgetting it. But luckily, I then, in about the age of 33, I realized I can't keep doing what I'm doing anymore. I was looking at the people that were 10 years older than me, and I didn't like the way that they felt and the way that they looked in terms of like they were stressed all the time. They were drinking heavily all the time to cover up their pain. And I was like, wow, like I don't want to be doing that 10 years from now. And so that is when I chucked it all to go backpack around the world for a year. And everybody thought I was crazy because that's the kind of thing you do when you're 18, right? But you don't do that at 33 when you're at the height of your career. But I did it. And this is sort of a long answer to your question, but I think the important thing is that when you have an understanding of your purpose, it's like understanding where north is on the compass. It just gives you a direction to be walking that you want to be walking, as opposed to feeling like you have to be following all these other paths that society or your family or anybody else has dictated to you is the way to walk. And when you have this sense that, no, actually, I got to pick this one and I'm super excited about this one and I can't wait to get up every morning and walk in that direction, it just puts life in a different perspective. It just changes the whole game.
That's beautiful. Yes, absolutely. So would you say that one of the most important steps that we can maybe make in the direction of finding our purpose is acknowledging in the first step that we are doing something that maybe is not our own way, so that we are just following rules of people who once said that this is how we should do it, but it's not our own way. So that at first we have to realize, okay, what I'm living is not who I am. I just accepted some sort of way how we should live life.
Yeah, I love questions. I find that asking questions of myself and then when I meet other people is a fantastic way to allow the mind to open. And so, in that context, asking yourself, so why am I here? When I asked it in the context of Das Café, was like, why do I exist? Right? But you could tone that down, same words, but tone it down a little bit. And you could ask, why am I here in this situation? Right? how did I get here? You know, was this by personal choice, or is this a series of events that really I didn't choose? I sort of have been going with the flow, either because I wasn't aware that I could choose, which is fine, right? For many, many decades, I was aware that I didn't get to choose. Or is it because I was accepting the input of other people, or I was actually accepting the input of belief systems that came from movies or from books? But basically, I wasn't really in control of this thinking. And that's fine, right? I think it's fantastic if you have tremendous awareness when you're 7 or 15 or 20. I did not. But to allow yourself to ask the question, why am I in this moment of my life? How did I get here? And is this where I want to be, right? Yes. So very simple little comfortable questions that can allow you to process, this is how we got here. Then you can ask another little question, which is, am I happy that I'm here? You know, do I feel like this is where I want to be, where I'm supposed to be? Right? And then you can ask yourself another question. So given that I've got about 28,900 days, if I keep staying here, wherever here is, am I going to get to the end and be okay with that? Right? And so these types of questions can be very, very soft ways for the unconscious to give feedback to the conscious that says, wow, we are totally on the right path. Or, wow, now's a good time to change direction.
Yes. I mean, when you were 33, you said you had, I guess, one of these moments where you thought, okay, wow, let's change directions. Even though most of the people around you, you said, thought you were crazy, right?
Yeah, and I got to be honest, it wasn't like at 33 I started asking this. Like, I was asking this question every day, okay. You know, and it was, I remember being in a cab coming home all the time because I was a management consultant. And so I'd fly out at 4:30 in the morning every Monday. And I don't like getting up early in the morning, by the way. So this should have been my first clue that this is not the thing. But so I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning. I'd catch a flight to somewhere. I'd arrive at the client. And then I'd work until 11 o'clock at night. I'd grab a dinner if I could, if anything was open. Or I'd get food out of the vending machine. Like, totally unhealthy life, right? And so I would come home on my flight on a Friday. And I would be in the cab. And I had this little thing that I would do. I'd have my hands doing this thing where they're almost touching each other and you can feel the energy transfer between your hands. And I would do this in the cab coming back home, and I just would be thinking to myself, I can feel the energy here, and I know I can't see that, and I know there's something there. And it would just transfer to this bigger thought, like, and I know there's something bigger out there, and I know there's something bigger in life. But it just took me a lot of years to finally have the courage to pull the plug on it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your honesty. I think this is so important because I sometimes have the impression that also for many people who might be listening now and think, okay, I need to find my purpose of life, then there is also new pressure, and this pressure right. doesn't help, right? No. So that it is, okay, I need to find my purpose of life tomorrow, sort of. So
yeah, let's put that in perspective. I was 33, right? Yeah. And I had been thinking about it for years and still hadn't figured it out. So yeah, no pressure, everybody. But I will tell you that in the same spirit as we were talking offline, and one of your joys is sharing what now has become more of a common term, like a life hack, right? And so what I will share with everybody who's listening is it took me that long to figure it out. But in the process of figuring it out, and then after writing my books, many, many people come to me and they say, John, can you help me figure it out? And so I created a process to help people just ask questions, right? And this is a life hack. This is a spirituality hack that enables you to not have to wait 5 years until you're 33 years old, sitting in a cab trying to figure out this energy thing, right? Because yes, there are absolutely tools and techniques that can enable you to get clarity about these things and to help you figure out what is your life purpose that don't require the very long and tedious process that I went through. And honestly, these same hacks to some degree were probably out there. I just didn't know they were out there. So part of what I love also is letting people know it doesn't have to be this long, painful journey, right?
Yes.
It can be a lot smoother and easier.
Yes. So when you were 33, you said, okay, let's change something, and you started to go backpacking. Tell us a little bit about what you experienced while you were backpacking. Like, what were the thoughts, how you were feeling? Like, maybe it was like this new freedom you all of a sudden had and new perspective. So Maybe you can make a little time travel to that time.
Absolutely. So, you know, I had done this month in Costa Rica when I was 28. And so that was my first real taste. I'd done two trips that year. I did 10 days in Italy, which was my first time to Europe. And then I had literally been home for like 3 days. I turned around, packed my bag, went to Costa Rica for a month. And so I was 28 then. And that was my first experience of like, wow, like there's this whole world out there, you know? And I had dreamed of seeing other people and other cultures and animals ever since I was a kid. I don't know why, but I was just wired with this desire to see the world. And I think that over time, I had convinced myself that just wasn't going to happen. You know, this isn't what you do. You go to school, you get a job, you work, you get a couple of weeks of vacation a year, and maybe you take a 1 week trip. But this whole dream of like seeing the world, like that just wasn't going to be in the cards. And so then when I was 33 and I decided to leave it all behind, I remember writing in my notebook a week after I was on the road that before I left, there were 1,000 reasons why going on this trip made no sense whatsoever, right? And after 7 days on the road, not a single one of those reasons made any sense anymore. Oh. So, yeah, because you get out there and the thing is, and again, I'm not saying everybody needs to go backpack the world, right? You can find your sense of awareness about your own life in many different ways. But for me, this was something that was obviously inside me for a long, long time. And I finally let it out. You know, I finally followed through on the dream. And so if someone else's dream is to, like, I don't know, own a flower shop, well, they'll probably have this same feeling of like, oh my God, this is awesome, right? I finally made it, right? Or to whatever. So it doesn't have to just be backpacking around the world, but that was mine, right? And the other thing I realized, and I think this is one of the most powerful things to realize, at home, everybody thought I was crazy because this is not who they were, right? And I thought to myself, maybe I am crazy because nobody around me knew anything about this or was doing this, right? But then you get out on the road, and my first day, it took me 32 hours, but I finally arrived in Koh San Road in Thailand. And I get out of my little backpacker place. I throw my gear in my room. I go outside the Koh San Road. Laura, everybody on that road is a backpacker, right? And you're like, oh my God. Like, no wonder I didn't talk to these people at home because they're on the road. So if you want to, you know, if you want to open a florist shop, then start hanging out with other florists, right? If you want to go backpack around the world, get out there with a backpack because that's where the adventurous people are. Yeah. And so this was hugely powerful to me to realize that it's not that nobody's doing this stuff. It's just that when you're sitting in your cubicle, you're not going to meet the people who are not in a cubicle, right?
Yes, that's exactly how it is. It's also so funny that our brain tries to trick us, like to stay in our comfort zone. And it's like, maybe they are right. So, no, it's just if you know that you don't want to live the life of the people around you, the same life, then you have to get out there. Then you have to do something different because else you do exactly the same thing.
And It's so, you know, there's an amazing book called Hidden Messages in Water. Mm-hmm. And it talks about the way in which your environment actually impacts you on a cellular level, because our bodies are mostly composed of water. You know, we look like flesh and bones, but every one of those aspects of our flesh is cells that contain water. So water is predominantly what we are. And so this environment that we surround ourselves with, is whether we realize it or not, is constantly impacting our state. So this is a great awareness. This is definitely a spirituality hack right here, because if you surround yourself with that which you want, you are far more likely to then become that which you want to become.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So today, I guess you found your purpose of living, of life, as you look very much like it, like you are shining. So what would you say is, how can you say it like in one sentence, or how would you describe your purpose of life?
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because it morphs a little bit over time, right? Mm-hmm. But so at this point, it's to create museum days for myself and for others.
That's beautiful.
And museum days is a concept that I talk about in the Big Five for Life book. And so just so that people understand what that is, the very short version of it is that if every moment of your life was recorded and cataloged, and, you know, everything you did and said and saw and the ways you spent your time, and then at the end of your life, a museum was built to honor you, And when you died, you became the tour guide for your own museum for all of eternity, right? So like how you live your life is going to be how you live your life for eternity, walking the halls of that museum. And so it's a question of what is going to be in your museum. Is it going to be spectacular moments that you would love to relive again, right? You're just talking about your little child. And so, you know, fantastic memories of you playing with your child. One of my favorite memories of all time when my daughter was a little baby. She was literally like 6 weeks old, and I was laying on the couch and she was laying on my chest. And I still to this day, she was in her little diaper, just this tiny little can't even move human being. And I was just laying there with her on my chest. I could literally spend 100 years in that room of the museum and just love that moment, right? And so the question is, what is going to be in our museums? And it's going to be based on the choices that we made, the beliefs that we allowed ourselves to hold. And so my purpose is to create museum day moments for myself and for others. And what I've discovered as a part of that is that for me, adventure is a big piece of that, you know? So you have to be careful when you're a giver. And I can tell already that you're a giver. You have to be careful when you're a giver that you aren't giving so much that you're forgetting to allow yourself to get, right? And so adventure for me is what gets me in a state where I can then give to other people. And if I go too long without being adventure, I'm not creating museum day moments for myself, and I'm not allowing my state to be in such that I can create museum day moments for others.
That's so true. That was also one of the biggest learnings for me in the last year, that I have to also take care of myself and not only be giving, because then one day you will be empty and then you can't serve anyone.
So yeah. Let me see if I can throw a huge paradigm shift out there for the people who are listening to this. Yeah. So I was definitely in the category of the person who I love to give, right? I love to give. And so I was in a room of people that I knew were all givers. I was doing an event one time and I could tell that this was part of their psyche as well. And I could tell that they were struggling too. And so I said, how many of you love to give to others? Well, of course, all the hands go up, right? And then I said, okay, how many of you have an easier time giving to others than receiving help, right? All the hands go back up. And then I took a long pause, Laura, and then I said, why are you being so selfish? And you saw the shock and horror on their faces, like, selfish? I'm not selfish, right? I'm a giver. I said, okay. Well, why do you like to help other people? And they came up with all kinds of answers. They need the help and, you know, they're struggling and the rest of it. And I said, I know, but why do you like to help other people? How does it make you feel? And they thought about it for a minute and then they said, it makes me feel good. I said, uh-huh. How do you think it makes them feel when they help you? It makes them feel good. And I said, then why aren't you letting other people feel good? Right? Because that's selfish. Yeah. Now, what's interesting is we were talking about asking questions, right? So to ask ourselves the question of why do I struggle to allow people to help me is going to bring back a moment somewhere earlier in your life where you adopted a belief system that said this is a bad thing. And I will tell you for me what it was is that in my family, I grew up in a household where when someone did something for you, the expectation was now you had to do something for them. Okay. And so it was almost like now you had an IOU out there, right? Mm-hmm. And I learned very early on as a child, I don't want to have a bunch of stacked up IOUs that now I have to do other stuff, right? I like to choose to do the things I like to do. I like to help people, but I don't want to have this as a stack of obligations. And unfortunately, for a long, long time, I adopted a belief system. I'd be like, no, it's good. It's good. Yeah, I don't need any help. It's good. Right?
Yeah. It's so good that you also say that look behind, like, why are you doing what you're doing? Like, if you're doing something that actually doesn't serve yourself, look why you are doing it. And then, solve like the limiting belief or the belief system you have behind it. And usually it's a story we tell ourselves why we are the way we are. Yeah.
Yeah. And do me a favor for everybody who's listening. When you look without judgment. You know, because it's so easy to look back and say, wow, I was so stupid back then. Like, it's very easy to default to a negative language or a negative version of yourself. But the truth is at that moment, that's what you knew, right? Yes. So give yourself a little freedom and a little flexibility to be okay with the fact that you didn't know at that moment. Yes. And also, give the people who helped create that belief system a little flexibility and freedom too, because they were probably doing the best they could with what they knew, with the life experiences they had, with maybe what their families taught them when they were kids. So they probably weren't intentionally trying to create a belief system that was unsupportive. And so just let it go, embrace the fact that you don't have to adopt that anymore, and move on.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Definitely. Very good point. I always say, try to be like in a, I don't know if that word exists in English, but in German, it's like to be a beginner spirit, like to be like this very, I really want to find out, like more like, curious, to be very curious, like what was the story? Why did I do it? And then just be like with fun, like look there with fun and try to just find out, because I think it makes fun to actually, to figure things out why you are the way you are, and then to be aware, wow, now I can change it because I put it to the surface and now I can see it and now I can change it. Yeah.
Well, and I'll tell you what, and then you can take things to, I totally agree with what you're saying. And in support of that, you can take things to a whole other level, which is, if a moment in your life didn't happen as it did, would you be the person you are today? Right. And so yeah. I grew up in a household also where yelling was pretty dominant. Right. And I'm a very auditory guy, so yelling is particularly challenging for me, right? I am the father I am today, right? And I made the decision the day that my kid was born that I would never raise my voice to that kid, right? Had I not have grown up in a household where yelling was the norm, I would not be the guy I am today to say, I'm not going to yell at my kid, right? Definitely. And so if I allow myself to expand this game, right, this play, maybe in order to be the father that I wanted to be before I was even born, right, there had to be an actor in my play who would demonstrate a particular behavior that I would have to experience at such a heart level that I would then say, I don't want to do that with my own kid, right? Doesn't mean you have to keep those people in your space, but you can sort of recognize maybe what role they were playing in the game to enable me to be the human I am today.
That is so important and so good that you say that, because I think this makes life so much easier and so much more joyful, because then you look back, as you said, to your story, and you don't go, wow, because of that person, I feel bad today. But you look back at your story and you say, thank you for screaming at me when I was a child, because now I can be this awesome father, which is giving my daughter this beautiful experience for growing to a strong, beautiful woman. And I totally 100% agree with you that it's so helpful to really take the stand in your own life, to look back and stand on the position that maybe my life and the people I met actually served me for being able to be the person I want to be today. And
this is a big balancing act, because there's an important decision-making process that you can have people in your life that are genuinely unsupportive, right? And they're not the energy you want around you. And so you have to be careful to not get in the space of like, oh, I'll just accept them as they are because they're an actor in my play and I'm supposed to learn something from this. Yes, I think when you look retrospectively, you can see that perhaps you learned something from the experience, but maybe what you're supposed to learn is that you're supposed to be courageous and get the heck out of there, right? So don't allow yourself to just stay in this space just because you're learning, right? Because that's the lesson, I guess, that you're supposed to learn. It might be to get out.
Definitely. I think this is very true for today, right? For the people who are surrounding us today. But I think when you were a child, as you said, when you cannot really get out, it really helps what you said to look at it back and say, well, actually, thank you. Because of you, I can be this awesome person today. So it was good. Good in like, Anführungsstrichen in German. I don't know what the word in English is. Great. So in the book, The Big Five for Life, you talk about the Big Five for Life. And would you say that it helps when you know your Big Five for Life to live your purpose of life? Is it like, does it depend on each other?
Yeah. So the analogy that I like to use, because I tend to be a very visual person also in terms of trying to understand things, is the purpose. Think of the purpose as like a river. And so I'm entering this human existence, and while I'm here, I'm going to figure out which river I want to go down. And this is all personal choice. And so I would like to, so let's say, for example, you choose the river of, I'm going to be on the, I want to make a difference in the lives of others river. So that's my purpose, to make a difference in the lives of others. Then the question is, of course, so what are you going to do Monday morning? Like, in what way is that going to be fulfilled? And so this is where your big five for life come in. So what ports of call are you going to stop at while you're on the make a difference river? And you may say, I want to be an accountant because I really like numbers and I want to help people figure out their tax returns, right? That would not be my personal one because that's not the way my brain is wired, but it could be someone else's and they're going to be great at that. And they'll make a difference in the lives of people by helping them at a time that often is very stressful for people. You may say, I want to, you know, help people bring babies into the world. And that's the way that I want to help people. I want to have a podcast. That's the way that I want to help people, right? So the choices that you make about what your big five for life are these ports of call. Now, some of these ports of call, you may say, I really only want to stop one time, right? Maybe I want to go build homes for the homeless in Guatemala. I'm going to go do that for 3 weeks and I'm good, you know? And then, okay, well, what's the next port of call I want to add to my destination list, you know? And so each of these big five for life support this overarching purpose and are part of that river. So, yeah, when people go through, so we have a course that you were asking before about how people find their purpose and find their five for life. And I was explaining that there are hacks to this. And so one of the hacks is this course that I created that asks people questions, right? Mm-hmm. And so when people go through this course, the whole goal is to enable them to become aware of their big five for life, knowing that this is a starting point, mm-hmm. right? Because sometimes you may get on the river and you're floating towards that destination and you realize, wow, it's actually way different than I thought it was going to be. You know, so you could have started your podcasting career and realized this actually isn't my thing, but better to have started it and learned that than to have wondered for 30 years. Wow. I bet I could have made a difference through podcasting. Right. And I have a very funny story of this that I met this couple and they had for 30 years, they had had this dream that they were going to get an RV. Like, do you know an RV is? The motorhome, the one that you drive?
Yes.
Okay, so they were going to get, when they retired, they were going to get an RV and they were going to drive their motorhome around the country. Right? This was the big dream. So they literally saved for 30 years. Right? They hit age 65. They retire. They buy a motorhome, like a very big investment. They're on the road for 7 days and realize, we hate this.
Oh, no.
So, and I'm not laughing at them in this moment. I'm just laughing at the situation because I'm sure we have all done the same kind of thing to some degree, right? So the huge aha with this is that, listen, if you have one of these things that is one of your big five for life, the sooner you can start to experience it, even if it's not in its full form, the better, because you may realize, wow, this is actually very different than the story that I'd created in my head, right? And so it's fine to start them and realize not what I thought, right? And then pick a different one and float to a different destination.
So I think what sometimes happens when we pick something and then we realize, wow, that is really not what I want to do. Sometimes we judge ourselves, right? We are like, oh, how stupid am I that I did that actually? So how would you say, how can we support ourselves in moments like this when we sort of pick the wrong big five for life, which is of course not really wrong, but which actually was not what we thought it would be.
Right. So one of the things that I tell people is after you have gotten awareness of your big five for life, that you will have a day. And when I was teaching a course in Amsterdam one time, and so in Amsterdam, everybody rides bicycles everywhere. And I said, and there's going to become a day right after you get awareness of your big five for life where the truck is going to come at you, right? And because the universe likes to test your conviction to these things. And so if you say, one of my big five for life is to open a florist shop, right? You're going to get out of here. You're going to get done with the course. You're going to start talking to people. And as you were talking about, it's amazing that the universe conspires to assist you. It's like the universe is waiting for you to get like 100% crystal clear about this is what I want. And then it's like, fantastic. Now that you want, we're going to throw all these resources your way. Because before that, we were like, well, as soon as you know, we're ready for helping. But until you know, like, we can't really help you. So now you're like, all right, I'm going to open a florist shop. And so all of a sudden, all these resources will be coming your way and opportunities, and people who used to own florist shops will be, you'll be sitting at a coffee shop and the person at the table next to you used to own it. Like, so all of this stuff will be coming your way. And then inevitably, a couple of weeks out, the truck will come. And the truck is an analogy for something that is going to throw you off your bicycle, right? If you're not careful. But if you know that at the 2 week mark, the truck is coming, then when the truck comes at you, you simply swerve out of the way and go beyond it, right? And so this is accepting that as part of the life project plan, like if you've ever done project management, step number 174 is all chaos occurs, right? And so when all chaos occurs, instead of letting it get you very flustered and upset, you just go, oh, no, 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 we're at step 174. This was supposed to
happen. That's awesome. I love that. Yeah.
And so when people are working towards their big five for life and they encounter something that is actually not what they wanted, I encourage everybody who's listening to be like, no, 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 this is step number seven, where I'm going to discover that one of the things I thought was my big five for life really isn't. No problem. No judgment, no stress, no self-evaluations. This is just step number seven, right?
That's beautiful. I love that. Yeah. So just be aware. It's just part of the journey.
Absolutely.
I expected that.
Yeah. You brush your teeth in the morning. At some point, you unscrew the top of the toothpaste, right? It's just step number two in the process. So all of life has these little steps. This is just one of the steps of the big five for life.
I love that. Have you been in a situation where you said, well, this is one of my big five for lives, and it wasn't?
I do. Yeah, I have a great example for that, actually. So at one point, one of the ones on my big five for life list was to make the U.S. table tennis team for the Olympics.
Okay.
Yeah. And so to show you the power of the who's for this, so I was like, you know what? I really want to do this. And I was a great table tennis player. And I love sports in
general.
We
should play one day. I love table tennis.
All right. Yeah. When I'm in Berlin, we're going to find a table.
Yeah, definitely.
And so I loved playing and I was very, very good at it. And I love sport. But I was also, at the time I made this decision, I was about 35. And so physically, by the time you're 35, you're sort of past your prime for, like, I played beach volleyball. I played two-man beach volleyball. But you're sort of past your prime for that. But I thought I can still compete in a sport like table tennis because it doesn't require the huge expansion of physical energy, right? And so I started training, right? And I started talking to everybody I knew. And so I live in a place that's in Florida. And so I got on Google and I typed in table tennis Orlando, which is a city close to where I live. And so it turns out that there is a table tennis training facility in my town. Like, who knew? I've lived there for years. I had no idea. And this is, again, like the universe conspires to say, you start asking questions, you start getting answers, right? So I go to this place and I'm sitting there and I'm watching the players play. I do a couple of matches, right? I won a couple of matches. I absolutely got smoked in a couple of matches and I realized, like, okay, there's definitely a gap that I have to cover here. And then all of a sudden I'm sitting in the stands and I'm sitting with this other guy. We start chatting and the door opens and in walks this guy. And the guy sort of nudges me and he's like, hey, you know who that is? And I was like, no, first time I've ever been here. I don't know anybody. And he's like, that's the former Russian table tennis Olympic coach.
Crazy.
Now, if I'd have stayed with this dream, would that have been an amazing who for me? Like,
yes.
Incredible, right? So I didn't stay with it for one main reason, actually. And the main reason is because I learned the more I played that in addition to the athlete, it's also very much about the equipment. And this was a little bit of a disillusionment to me because the fact that one player could have a specific type of gel on their paddle or a specific type of glue would make them better than the other athlete, I thought that was completely unfair. I thought all the athletes should have to have the exact same paddle so that it was athlete versus athlete, brain against brain, right? And that's just kind of the way I'm personally wired. I'm huge on integrity. And I thought that this was kind of out of integrity. The fact that someone could come up with a better glue and therefore have an advantage over you.
Yeah.
Right. But the fact that I was able to walk into this environment and literally within hours meet the person who could have helped me get to that level was such a brilliant illustration of the way that the who's are always ready to help you. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dropped it off my list. I didn't feel bad about it at all. I was like, okay, fine. I got the chance to rise to this level. I'm good with leaving. No judgment. Let's move on to the next one.
That's beautiful. So when listening to you, would you say that maybe the big five for lives aren't really about the big five for life, but about the person you become while pursuing your big five for life.
Wow. Awesome assessment. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I think it's probably, there's probably a weighted amount in there. So it's probably 70-30, and I'm not sure exactly. And also, actually, I'll say it like this. I think it totally depends on the person, which is the 70 and which is the 30, whether it's the progress towards or the actual event. Because sometimes the moment of the actual doing, seeing, or achieving can be the fulfillment of so much, right? Maybe you mentally overcome belief systems that said you couldn't do this. Maybe the world was telling you for whatever reason that you're not good enough for this, right? So that moment of standing on the pinnacle is actually the culmination of years of work. And that truly is the joy moment. But I will say this, that so I used to be a professional beach volleyball player, and I had this amazing moment of epiphany one day as it relates to what you're talking about. So I lived on the 26th floor of a building, and during the winter time, I would run the stairs 26 flights up and down, right? Wow. Yeah, to build my stamina, to build my strength. And when I started off, of course, I thought I was pretty good. And then I realized, like, I'm getting hammered out here. Like, I need to be better, right? So I trained and I trained. And I would wake up at 6 a.m. and I would go set a volleyball into a basketball hoop for an hour and a half every day before work, right? So I trained and I trained and I trained and I trained and I trained. I ran up these flights of steps. And so I came into the next season, and teams that used to beat us pretty regularly, we just absolutely destroyed this year, right? And so we entered our tournament, and I think we won our third tournament of the year. Like, we were clearly a much better team, and finally we won the third tournament of the year. And it was an absolute battle in the last match, right? And it was like tied, and then we were up by one, and then they were up by one, tied. And finally the last point of the game happens. We win the match, and I'm exuberant, right? And I throw my arms out to my buddy. We hug each other. We can't believe it. We won. And then it was over. And I remember thinking to myself, I wanted to freeze time because I had worked for years to get to that moment, right? And then it was over like that, you know? And I learned so much in that moment. And I think this is maybe why I love this question that you asked, because it wouldn't have been something that I'd have thought of. So I love that you asked this question. What I learned in that moment was to enjoy every pass, to enjoy every set, every serve. I learned to enjoy biking to the beach on the way to a training session, right? Because the moment of victory, this pinnacle that I was thinking, I have to get to here, it was gone in a second. And if that was the only thing I ever focused on, and I didn't have the concept of museum at that moment, but if I had understood that, my museum would have consisted of just a few seconds, right? Yeah. And that would have been a very shallow museum to walk through.
Yeah, that's true. Ah, beautiful. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think this is also so important when you are, maybe because when you have a big five for life, that you then actually figure out, well, that is not my one big five of life, but you became like this awesome person on the way through there, and you met amazing people and you made great decisions. Then this is what it was there for. So to also see the path towards the big five for life. Yeah.
You're right. Every learning along the way towards discovering that this wasn't one of your big five for life, if that ends up being the case, is a piece of your museum that you'd probably be happy to walk, right? Yeah. But if all you focused on was whether I won or lost because I did or didn't do my big five for life, you'd actually walk that wing of the museum with disdain, you know, frustration. And that's not the way to do it.
Who was the person in your life that inspired you the most?
Ooh. Inspired me the most. I don't think there's necessarily one person that I would say was the single source of inspiration. A couple of people leap out to mind. There was one person I remember. He was a friend of my dad's, and he had a way of dealing with people who were very sort of, this is the way it is, right? And he had this sort of vocal pattern he would use, and he would say something like, you know, I can see why you might think that. From my perspective, I sort of am looking at it from a different way, you know? And so he would sort of honor where they were in their thinking, and then very, very softly share his perspective, but help get them to look at the world in a different way. And I always admired that, you know, the fact that he could sit in the storm of opinions, like, no, this is the way it is, this is the way it is, and keep himself centered and not only not lose his own self, but at the same time help enable people to think about the world in a little bit different way. People who are very strong in their beliefs, you know? So I love that. My grandmother used to have an expression, which I loved. She said, help make the world a little bit better than when you got, when you leave, try and make sure that the world is a little bit better than when you got here. Right. And I think that's a great expression, because if you did nothing more than inspire one person to think about themselves in a little more positive light, or to help one person figure out one part of their dream, or to help them figure out that they get to dream. I think if you just helped one person, like, you've won the game of life. I really do. Anything above that is bonus.
Yeah, I agree. I have a question I ask all of my guests. And the question is, imagine we would meet again on the last day of your life, maybe a long time from here. But there has been a technical problem and everything from you is deleted. Like, your online course doesn't exist anymore. Your books don't exist anymore. And I would come to you and I would say, John, I'm so sorry. Like, there's been a little mistake. Everything is deleted. And I would give you a white sheet of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, if nothing else from you would exist when you leave this world, what would be the three wisdoms you would like to leave for the people? What are the three things you would want people to know that are true for you?
Wow, beautiful question. I think I would probably, on one of the pieces of paper, I would probably write the museum day concept.
Yes.
Right? Because I think that is something very profound that has changed my life completely. I think I would probably express my belief system about the way I think life works, which is not that it has to be anybody else's, but just so that they would have another option to think about. And that is that when you look at human existence, I think there's one of two possibilities. Either you were something before you're born, so a spirit, an energy, an essence, right? And that you made the decision to enter the human life for a reason. And the human reason was probably to have fun, to grow, to learn, and to somehow expand the universal consciousness. Because I think that there is a reason why humanity exists. And the only reason I think about this all the time, and the only answer I can keep coming to, is that in some way, shape, or form, we are co-creating something. And I don't know exactly why we're creating it or what the end game is, but I have to believe that every time you learn something, it enters the consciousness of the universe, and I can actually tap that even without realizing it, right? It's sort of like the universal energy internet. And so if you've ever thought a brilliant thought, it is out there in the ether, and if I allow myself to connect to it, I can have access to that thought. And so as each of us are making our own respective contributions, that we are contributing to the overall universal database to enable humankind to grow. And maybe it's not just humankind. I actually like this idea even better, that every animal out there is having its own thoughts, right? And so every creature is contributing. That's why we're here. And so it's either that. So then we enter this human life, right? And we live out our statistical 28,900 days, and then we die. And then we go back to being what we were before, right? And maybe we re-enter the human experience again, or maybe we come back as something else. I don't know. I really don't know. I'll know after I die. And I actually look forward to knowing that. I'm not looking forward to dying in terms of like, oh, I can't wait to die. But I'm comfortable with the fact that when I do die, I'll get to know this. And that's pretty cool. It's sort of like having something on your calendar you're looking forward to, right? And so it's either this way, that we're something before we're born, then we get to experience human life, and then we die and we go back to this something else. And if it's that, there's really not much point in stressing, right? You might as well enjoy it while you're here. You might as well embrace the spirit of this gift that we have been given. If on the other side, you're actually not something before you're born. So your parents had sex, 9 months later, you dropped out, there you are, right? And you statistically get your 28,900 days. And at the end, you're going to die and you're going to turn to dust, and that will be it, right? That is all you get, is these 28,900 days. You might as well stress less and enjoy it more, because you know, I mean, it's almost like there's even more pressure in that scenario to just like enjoy it, because this is it.
You don't get another shot.
Yeah. No take two on this one. And so I think I would probably write that down in the hopes that it might help people like enjoy this experience more, because I really do believe it is truly a gift, right? And then the last thing that just intuitively came to me was to be grateful for what you have. Because it's very easy in our down moments where we feel like this is unfair. I've worked really hard for this and it should be better than this, or I'm a good person, right? Why aren't good things happening to me? But if we allow ourselves to open our field of vision, we realize that we have so many gifts, right? At a very, very basic level, because travel so much means the world to me. The fact that I was born in a place where I was handed the opportunity to get a passport where I could go anywhere in the world and they would just welcome me with open arms, right? There's very few countries in the world that have that kind of passport when you look at the whole list. I didn't do anything to deserve this. It's not like I did a lot of good deeds. It's not like I helped a lot of people. It's not like I made a contribution to humanity. I just woke up on day one and they were like, hey, you get access to this. Right? I mean, that is such a gift. And so shame on me if I don't take advantage of that gift to do something good with it. Right. Yeah. And the other thing is, in the spirit of gratitude, I can see you right now. My father is 77. And before I left home, 2 days before I left home, he told me that he's losing sight in his left eye. He's quite ill. And he's not going to be able to see out of that eye anymore, right? There are many people who are born blind, that they will never get the chance to see the world through eyes, right? So no matter what else is going wrong in my day, the fact that I can see you, the fact that I can see my child, is a gift beyond any other gift compared to the struggles that some people take. And you can extrapolate this level of gratitude to anything. The fact that you can write with your hands. Like, I mean, there is somebody out there whose existence is so much more difficult than yours, right? And I say yours, including me, including everybody else's, because there is always somebody who's got it worse than you. And so I think I would probably write that on the paper too, to try and be in a state of gratitude and be open to the possibilities. And I'll tell you one super fast story associated with that, because I know we're just sort of closing down our time together. I was driving in the car one day and I was having a personal pity party, right? It was a day that had not gone well. And I think I was expecting to close a contract for another translation of my books. And it was something that I was really looking forward to. And then something happened. It didn't happen. Not that it would never happen, but it was supposed to happen on that day and it didn't happen. And I was frustrated and upset. And I was driving in my car, having my personal pity party. Again, notice while I'm driving in my car, right? How many people don't even have cars? And so I'm driving in my car, I'm having my pity party, and I pull up to the exit ramp where I'm about to enter the highway. And I see a man walking down the exit ramp. Now this is where I live. This is like, you would never see that. Never. Right. Because it's somewhat of a rural area. There's no reason for a guy to be walking down the highway, down an exit ramp, right? And I see him and he's only got one arm. And I saw him. And in that instant that I saw him, the whole awareness of so many things that I love to do, right? I love to pick up my kid. At that time, Sophia was just a little baby. And I thought, wow. Wow, to not be able to pick her up. And when she was little, I used to do this game. I think at 3 months, it's a little too young yet, but you'll see. So you pick up this game and you literally throw them up in the air and you catch them on the way down. And before I became a parent, I'd see people doing this. And I'm like, oh my God, don't drop your kid. But you realize when it's actually your own kid that there's very little chance that you would never drop them, right? You're right there, you catch them every time. But anyway, so I love doing this. And she giggled and laughed. And this was such a great bonding moment between the two of us. And I thought to myself, wow. If I only had one arm, I could never do that, not even one time, right? And I thought about how much I love to play volleyball, and I could not do that if I had one arm. And so I saw this man walking down the exit ramp, and all of this awareness came to me, and I felt so ashamed, you know, that who am I to be so ungrateful about something so insignificant as a contract, right? And I kid you not, Laura, I pulled forward onto the exit ramp because the light turned and I had to pull forward. And I pulled forward and I looked in my rear view mirror to see this man and he wasn't there. I know he was there when I was looking at him before. And there was no way he could have walked fast enough to not be there when I saw him again. And I thought to myself, and I see that this kind of stuff happens. And I think to myself, It's like an angel, you know, like they exist in these moments to remind us of, listen, not in a judgmental way, but to remind us of, you know what, maybe it's time to step back from the pity party a little bit. So yeah, be grateful would be the last one that I'd talk about.
Thank you so much for sharing the story. Touched me very much. Thank you. Yeah, I think we can really just I think it's a beautiful point here to let the interview go. And I just want to say, really, I thank you so much. I appreciate so much talking to you. It was such a beautiful conversation. And thank you so much also for writing your books, for going out to the world, for inspiring so many people. I think you're such a gift to the world. So thank you so much also for the concepts you created. And I think it really inspires so many people, and you can be so proud of yourself. And yeah, I really just want to acknowledge you that it's just, yeah, I'm very grateful that you exist and that I had the chance to talk to you. Thank you so much. And just
exist collaboratively. If we as a human race continue to collaborate, yeah, I really think there's nothing we can't solve. There's no heights that we can't achieve.
So true. The very last question for everyone who's thinking now, I want to get to know more about John and I want to do the course. And what's the best way to get in touch with you or to find your course? I will put it all in the show notes. So maybe you can just give a quick information. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So to give just a single site, and then I'll give you the other ones for the show notes. But yeah, to give a single site, it's my name. It's johnstrolecki.com. And if you go there, you can find out more about me. And then there's a separate page that has the course information and links to the respective, because depending on what country somebody's in, maybe they go in Germany or maybe they go in the Netherlands or somewhere else. But all of that is on johnstrolecki.com. And that is the best way to find me, as well as to learn about upcoming stuff. I have been told not to spoil it. So I will not spoil it, but I will drop a little teaser and to say that fans of the Das Café who enjoy walking into the cafe and having an experience are going to be pretty excited come October. But I can't – I'm going to not to say more than that. So
okay, awesome. Thank you so much. And yeah, just thank you, thank you, thank you. I really hope that I meet you one day in person. And thank you so much for this great conversation. All the best to you.
We're going to play table tennis in Berlin next time.
We will do that.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dich dieses Interview genauso inspiriert hat und dich genauso voller Lebensfreude aufgepumpt hat quasi. Und wie gesagt, ich freue mich riesig, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust. Und wenn du gerne nochmal möchtest, dass ich mit John ein Interview führe, dann schreib mir gerne unter dem Post von heute, was dich interessieren würde und über welches Thema wir gerne sprechen sollen, wo wir nochmal tiefer eintauchen sollen. Und dann machen wir einfach nochmal ein Interview. Und genau, und dann gibt es noch ganz, ganz, ganz tolle Neuigkeiten. Und zwar kannst du ab heute dich wieder anmelden für die Rise Up and Shine Uni. Die Tore für die Rise Up and Shine Uni sind wieder geöffnet. Und zwar kannst du dich bis zum, will ich es genau richtig sagen, bis zum 3.2., bis zum 3. Februar, diesen Sonntag, kannst du dich noch für den Early Bird Preis anmelden. Genau. Da kannst du dich nochmal anmelden und dann geht es los mit der Rise Up and Shine Uni. Und ich freue mich, wenn du dabei bist. Du findest den Link dazu in den Shownotes. Und ganz kurz, um dir da nochmal einen kurzen Wrap-up zu geben, worum es in der Rise Up and Shine Uni geht. Es geht genau darum, dass du in deine Schöpferkraft kommst, dass du eine Vision für dein Leben entwickelst, dass du erkennst, wie viel du aus dir heraus erschaffen und verändern kannst und wie du ein richtig erfülltes, erfolgreiches und glückliches Leben für dich erschaffst. Und aus diesem ganzen Bullshit-FM, aus diesem negativen Gedankenkarussell aussteigst und wirklich ein richtig positives, liebevolles Mindset und eine innere Einstellung entwickelst und dich ganz tief mit dir, mit deiner Essenz verbindest. Und genau, wenn dich das interessiert, dann komm vorbei, komm in die Rise Up and Shine Uni. Wir freuen uns alle riesig auf dich. Da wartet auch eine riesengroße Community, die sich freut, dich zu begrüßen. Ich freue mich riesig, dich zu begrüßen. Und wie gesagt, bis Sonntag zum Early Bird Preis und danach kannst du dich ganz normal zum normalen Preis anmelden. Und dann starten wir los mit Runde Nummer 2 von der Rise Up and Shine Uni. Und ja, ich freue mich auf dich. In diesem Sinne, hab jetzt einen grandiosen Tag und lass es dir einfach gut gehen. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on and Namaste, deine Laura.